Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. All right. Hey, welcome back to the pod. We're here in season two, keeping things rolling. It's October 24th, 2025. I just couldn't help myself but to put out an episode today because it's October 24th, and that's a pretty big anniversary when it comes to the world of finance and investing. Some of you might be familiar with it, but October 24th, 1987, it's 28 years ago. Is that right? Somebody check my math. 28 years ago was considered Black Monday. The stock market crashed on this day pretty substantially. Oh, God damn it. Take two. Welcome back to the pod. We're continuing on here with season two. Today's episode is going to be a little bit of a different tone in a couple different ways. We're jumping right into it. The first way it's a little different is we've start out this season with a mix of interviews and solo format episodes, and this is another solo format episode. The other way that it sticks out a little bit is that we're genuinely pretty upbeat about the state of the macroeconomics and the markets. Not because we're following the herd or drinking the Kool-Aid, but you know, when we look at the important indicators of inflation and GDP growth and unemployment, well, it's a mix of trends, right? And we've talked about that in our previous episode this season, and that there's a mix of trends and none is really significant or standing out above the rest. And so you have things that are maybe making you feel like a little bit uncomfortable or unconfident, higher jobless claims or lower job creation or lower levels in the producer price index or the consumer price index. And at the same time, the United States economy is continuing to chug along, keeping inflation in check. GDP growth is strong. And we're in a period now of declining interest rates, which means that there'll be greater liquidity, which is more cash in our economy. And that's good for companies and that's good for people because when there's more cash available at lower interest rates, there's more money to invest in hiring. There's more money to invest in the stock market. There's more money to invest in housing and real estate. And there's more cash to go around. So, you know, overall, we feel pretty optimistic. But today, we want to sound a slightly more cautionary tone. And the reason is today is October 24th. And that's a fairly inauspicious date in the history of Wall Street and finance. You might not know exactly that it was October 24th or that it was 1929, but October 24th, 1929 was Black Monday, and that's the day that the stock market crashed. I'll have to cut that out. So October 24th, 1929 was the day of the major stock market crash in the United States that ended the Roaring Twenties and brought about over a decade of down markets, down economy, what we knew as the Great Depression. And America's economy and stock market was only really saved by World War II and the injection of government spending and industrialization that came about from that. And October 24th, 1929 was a really bad day. October itself has had multiple crashes and crises. There was the Panic of 1907, and that led to many sweeping changes in legislation and laws to control what people on Wall Street were doing because they were getting really risky. For those of you who are old enough, you might remember the Great Recession and the housing market crisis or crash in the late 2000s and how that, you know, 5-6 years later resulted in a lot of new laws in this country because we needed to take some of the risk out of the economy and out of Wall Street. And 1907 did that for us. that was like a 100-year, it's like a 100-year flood, right? 1907 was bad, 2007 was bad. 1929 was a crash. There was also October 19th, 1987. That was Black Monday. Some of us were alive for that, but I don't think any of us were paying attention to it. But that was a day the stock market dropped 22%. So pretty big deal. And, you know, so the thought was today to just do a quick recording and talk about some things that you can do, even if you're feeling really positive or optimistic about where the economy and the stock market and your investments are heading as we come to a close in 2025. I think we've made a strong case for why there's not much of a need to panic. In fact, we've done that for investments in the economy in an episode. And then we also did sort of like the kickoff episode on if you can afford to buy a home and talked about how, yes, you absolutely can. And mortgage rates are super affordable right now. They're probably going to get a little bit better, but in 5 or 10 years from now, they're probably not going to be as good as they are today. And houses are only going to be more expensive, right? So it's a good time to be saving up to buy a house and investing in real estate. And it's probably a good time to be continue being consistent with your investment strategy and not trying to, you know, panic and head to the exits because, quite frankly, nobody can actually predict where a top is, just like they can't predict when the crash will come. They can't predict a bottom. They can't predict when the rebound will happen. And so it's really in everybody's best interest to stay consistent to their investing strategy and not give up just because the headlines are telling you something. So before we get into any kind of actionable steps on what you can do to be a bit more prepared in the event that things do get choppy or there is a slowdown in the economy or the market turns sour and stock market goes down or Bitcoin continues its downward trend that started several weeks ago. I'm going to put a couple graphics. It's my first attempt. We're going to put some graphics on the screen. Put a couple graphics up that show some things you need to take into consideration when it comes to your investing strategy and what you're doing, right? Now, the first one I want to show you, I want you to pay attention to is that the annual S&P 500 returns. And this goes through 2022, so I don't have 23 and 24. 23 and 24 were both plus 23 and plus 22%, basically. So they were big, strong up years. And in the graphic you're looking at right now, you see that at least two-thirds of the time, the stock market finishes a year with a gain. And there's no real pattern or rhyme and reason. And in fact, if you took out that first decade, we talked about the stock market crash in 99 and how it ushered in a decade of depression and you know, not just the markets, but the economy as well. You know, you could see at least like a fifth of the bad years for the stock market came way back then in the 1920s. When you just look back over the past 20 to 50 years, it's even more likely that the stock market's going to finish up. And you can't predict when it's going to come down. You know, there was obviously, 2001, 2002, like those, that there was a tech bubble, and then there was 9/11, and that was a bad run. And there was the Great Recession and global financial crisis in 2008, and that was not so good. But even with the COVID year, you know, we had a bump from the COVID year, and it turned out that 2022 was a bad year because of the inflation that came as a result of COVID. And so that's why we talk about paying attention to the macro indicators and what's going on in the economy with interest rates and GDP growth. And, you know, you could probably have predicted 22 would be a bad year if you had seen how much in 2020 we set the conditions for inflation and high interest rates and a stock market crash. A lot of people did that. Those aren't going on right now. But overall, you could see that generally you're going to finish up. Now, here's another graphic I want to share. And these are 10-year annualized rolling returns on the S&P 500. And what we talk about all the time is when you're investing, you're not investing for today or tomorrow or next year. If that's your goal for what you need money for, you're putting that in a high-yield savings account. Why? Because you don't want to take a risk of having a bad year. Instead, you're investing in a portfolio in your brokerage account for 5 to 10 years down the road. And if you just hang on for about 10 years, the long-term average return to that portfolio is going to be 10% per year. That means you're going to more than double your money in that 10 years. You just have to hold on instead of selling when it's down. And when you look at this chart, what it shows is even when there were bad years, You know, the only way that it was really bad for you and your portfolio is if you cashed out and sold everything after a crash, because then you didn't give yourself the chance to recover when the market bounced back. So if just we have a Black Monday next week on October 27th, like nobody wants that, of course. But the lesson here is don't go sell, right? Don't go sell. You shouldn't need to, because any cash you need for the next 3 to 5 years should be safely protected in a high yield savings account, maybe a certificate of deposit, maybe a money market fund, but the safest is going to be high yield savings account and the most liquid, I should say. And so you shouldn't really need to worry. If the bottom falls out, just buy more stocks. And that way, when the stock market recovers the rest of the year and into 26 and 27, you're going to get extra gains, and it'll more than make up for what you might lose if we just suddenly have a bad, you know, a spooky week of Halloween on stock market. It gets even better, though, if you can hold on for longer. And when you look out here, this next graphic I'm showing on the screen here is the 30-year annual returns. And again, by the way, this is part of our attempt to take season two into the next level by doing a video version of our podcast. So we still have the audio version available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if that's where you're listening, you can go into the show notes and you can click a link and you'll be able to download these PDFs and see what we're talking about. Or you also could just take a click the link to the YouTube episode, and then you can, you know, fast forward to like the 10-minute mark and see what we're talking about. But if you recall, with the 10-year average, there were a couple years when you actually did stand to lose money cashing out of your 10-year savings. And that was, again, if you cashed out right after a crash. But when you go out to 30 years, the worst you could possibly do, again, if you cashed out, if you've been invested for 30 years from 1900 all the way up to the stock market crash in October 1929, and you sold everything, you still would have averaged an 8% per year return. And over the long run, 30 years are going to average 10.8% per year. That means you're going to 4X your investments. If you just put $10,000 into your TSP right now and wait 30 years, it's going to be worth between $40,000 and $50,000. Pardon me. And that's really important, because we're talking about your retirement savings, your thrift savings plan. I remembered having a bunch of colleagues who back in, you know, 2021, 2022, when we were going into, we had this sort of high inflationary period, and there were some projections that the stock market would correct and there would be a bad year, as 22 did play out. But way back in 2021, they moved all their TSP savings from, or investments from, the C fund into the G fund. They got really defensive. And then they kept it there. So while they might have missed out on some of the losses in 22, because they kept it there, they missed out on the gains of 23 and 24. And now they're 10 or 15% behind where they should be. If you just stay with it, this is the thrift savings plan. This is for you in 15, 20, well, maybe somebody who's listening, maybe 10 years, but mostly part 15, 25, or 35 years in the future. So all you have to do is look at this chart and see that just keep your money in there. Over 30 years, you're going to make a killing. You don't have to try to time the market. You don't have to worry. And that sort of brings us to the big cliche, which is timing the market, right? And as Warren Buffett always told us, it's not timing the market, it's time in the market. The graphics I've just shared with you for the 10 and 30 year average returns should show you that the time in the market matters. Like, just stay in, stay consistent, and you will succeed. But it's really hard to actually time the top and time the bottom. If you could, you would be better off. If you could. If you could predict that today, Friday, October 24th, is the highest the S&P 500 is going to be for the next 5 years, and you sell today, and then on like January 30th of 2028, you correctly identify that that's the lowest it will ever be, and you buy all back in, you can do better. Now, of course, that's about a 1 in a Googleplex chance that you would get that correct as a bet. But that means you're a Googleplex minus one more likely to get it wrong and to sell it after it's already started crashing, or to buy it after it's already started recovering. And if you do that, if you try to time the market, you're actually going to be worse off than if you just stay put. I'm putting up on the screen now a graphic that is showing three different traders. And one of them is, his name is Jerry, right? Or her name is Jerry. And she perfectly times the top of the market. So she sells today. It's the top. The market, Strack market crashes big time. And then a year and a half from now, she buys back in. 5 years from now, where is she? Well, she's going to have about 1.46 million. All right. Then you have Nick. All right. I'm sorry, Bill, right? Bill, Nick, Jerry. So Bill also sells it today, right? Like they panic. They're like, the market's going to crash. I'm going to sell today. They did it correctly, but they didn't get back in until the market recovered. So they missed the bottom. They've got about $80,000 less. They have 1.38 million 5 years from now. Now, what about Nick, the third trader? Nick doesn't sell, doesn't try to time the market, just stays consistent and stays with his strategy, keeps investing a little bit every month, doesn't sell, doesn't trade, doesn't try to guess the headlines or anything. And Nick just stays the course because Nick is remembering that if I just stay consistent 10, 20, 30 years into the future, I'm going to make millions of dollars through my strategy. And Nick ends up with 1.42 million, right in the middle. So the lesson is, and you know, I want to say thanks to the Best Interest blog, which I've given them credit and I've cited their, this is their work. They did the math behind it and they made the charts. But the point is that if you're concerned about your investments, if you're concerned about the market, most people think that the right thing to do is to make a bunch of trades, cash out their C fund, invest in the G fund, maybe over in their Vanguard account or their E-Trade account, they sell their VOO or their VTSAX and they buy some VBIAX, I believe is a ticker for the inner fund. Okay, we're back. All right. So it's not to sell. It's not to try to convert. It's not to try to run away and hide simply because you don't have the access to the information. You don't have the good luck and the odds are against you that you'll actually time it right to somehow do better. More than likely, and with the past example, why Bill was thrown in there is more than likely, if you sell today and you correctly anticipate a crash and you avoid the loss of the crash, you're going to wait so long because now the market's in a downward trend that you're not confident of when the bottom is and when the rebound will come and you'll buy in too late on the rebound. And so the Bill example shows us that you actually lose out because Nick, who stayed in it and was still buying shares when they were at their lowest price or still investing in real estate when it was at a low price, got extra returns or extra gains. So overall, they do better. So what do we say about the fact that like we're here in October and doing this, you know, fairly like morbid or macabre anniversary episode and tribute to the stock market crash of 96 years ago? That was a bad one, right? And if we look way back then, the stock market crashed by about 80% of its value, I believe, over 80% of its value from the peak in 1929. Over the course of the next like 3 or 4 years until it finally bottomed out in like the mid, or I think 1933 was when it bottomed out. So it declined like 80 to 90% over those years. It didn't catch back up to the pre-crash levels until 1955, right? That was 25 plus years. And so you might be looking at that and thinking to yourself, like, why would I want to take that loss and ride that out? Why wouldn't I sell to protect what I have? Because I'm going to still have 25 years from now what I have today. And that's just really like not understanding how this works. If you keep investing and keep buying, it's called dollar cost averaging. And that means that even though you're trading today when S&P is at 6,600, if it was to crash to 3,300, if you start buying an equivalent number of shares at 3,300, your average cost in dollars is going to be right in the middle. It's going to be right around 5,000. And so that's going to lower what's called your basis. And the more that you buy at those lower prices, the lower your basis goes. And eventually, even though you were buying at the peak at 6,600 and it crashed and you lost half the value of all those shares, by continuing to buy and staying consistent in your strategy and buying after it's lower, eventually your basis might be only $4,000 per share. And now you don't even need to worry about it getting back to $6,600 to recover your gains, which is what someone would have to do who sold in anticipation of the crash, or who sold right after the crash out of fear. Their basis would be locked in at $6,600, and they would have to wait 25 years to recover. But by you staying consistent with your strategy, continuing to invest through dollar cost averaging, you will pull down the basis of your investments. And that means in 25 years, by the time, you know, it gets back to 6,600, again, if that we're just using the 1929 crash, you know, obviously you saw the chart earlier for our Jerry, Nick, and Bill example, and that was the crash of the Great Recession in 2008, 2009. And that only took about a little less than 5 years to recover. You know, the COVID crash in 2020 took like less than 6 months to recover. So it's not always 25 years, but the point is, like, if in any case you sell because you're afraid of a crash, or you sell after the crash out of fear or regret, you're going to have to wait until we re-achieve that point at which you, before the crash, to make up for your losses. Instead, stay consistent, keep investing, pull down that basis, and you'll be profitable much faster. And that's what, who is it, Nick? I'm getting these guys confused, but like Nick did, right? He just kept going and he ended up better off than the guy who tried to, you know, predict the market. Well, there's other objections to this. And those other objections are like, what about quote unquote safe haven assets? Why don't I sell and go to bonds? Well, as we've shared before, and as we've highlighted in our revised copy of Service and Wealth, this is the old copy. I've got my first print copy of the revised edition coming my way here in the next couple of days. We've got over 100 pages of new content in there, and it's updated. It's a lot easier to read, which I'm really excited about. So I basically, the first one, I tried to write kind of like a textbook, and this one, I just tried to rewrite it as a conversation. So it's a lot easier to read and understand. And there's over 100 pages of new content in there. One of the things we point out is bonds and stocks are highly correlated, like 0.8. That means that they kind of move in the same direction. We're not dealing with bond and stock markets of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s and 80s. When they moved in different directions, when stocks and bonds moved in different directions, and therefore it made a lot of sense to, if the market looked bad or stocks seemed like they might crash, to sell your stocks and go invest in bonds. And also, especially in the 70s and 80s during high inflation, the interest rate in this country was huge. So you could get into bonds and you could be making 15 or 17% returns by holding bonds that had almost zero risk to them because they were US treasuries. Also not the case, right? We're much lower interest rates, 4.5% down to 4%. And also, there's not a lot of guarantee that the, you know, now that we've hit like $39 trillion in a national debt and it's over two times what our GDP is, you can't really, you know, guarantee that that'll actually ever get paid off. So it's more risky. And that was no less true than in 2022. When the S&P 500 lost about 18.5% and the bond index lost 13%. So again, I mentioned earlier in this episode that I had a lot of colleagues and a lot of friends who started to get nervous with rising inflation in 2021 and moved all their investments over into bonds. They avoided at least some or all of the 18% loss in the stock market, but they still took a 13.5% loss in the bonds. And then they stayed there and they missed the 23% rebound in 2023. And so overall, they ended up worse off than our portfolio, which just stayed in stocks. So the point is, like, bonds are no longer a safe haven. They're not a safe asset. You really don't need to be messing with that. You have a better alternative with holding cash in a high yield savings account. You know, again, if you have $100,000 of total investments between your TSP, a brokerage, and a high-yield savings account. If you have $20,000 in the high-yield savings account, that has the same function of what bonds would have anyway, right? It's safe. It's safer than bonds. It's guaranteed by the federal government. And you're earning a 4.5% return, which is what bonds are earning. So you don't need bonds. The rest of your investments should be in stocks. So are there other safe haven assets that you could consider moving to? Well, as we point out again in our book, there's only really one true anti-correlated or reverse correlated or delinked asset, which is real estate and commercial real estate or private real estate funds. Those are the only ones with like a strong negative correlation to the stock market. So if you knew for 100% certainty that the stock market was going to crash on Monday, you sure sell all your stocks and go buy some real estate, or that would be smart. But if you don't know that that's going to happen, then there's no guarantee that that will work for you. You've probably heard recently a lot of people talking about gold. Gold has been on a monumental run, especially over the last year. Gold is considered a safe haven asset because there's only so much of it in the world. And so the value seen is always going up. A couple problems with that is it doesn't do anything. So it's not paying dividends. It's not generating income. And it's only worth what people say it's worth. So if suddenly, you know, we send a mission to Mars and come back with a metal that's even more precious and more shiny than gold, gold could go to zero because people are like, well, this, you know, vanadium or whatever it might be called, that's the new thing. So you generally want to be cautious about gold, but it is still a reasonable thing to have in your portfolio because it's a lot better than fiat currencies or dollars, right? Like dollars, the supply increases, which means the value decreases. So investing in gold can be a good way to protect the value of your money, even if as an investment, it's suspect. And other than the last couple of years when gold has been on a tear, it's generally been a pretty underperforming asset as something you would invest in for the future. You would still choose the stock market as getting you on average 10 to 11% returns when you can look out over 10 to 20 to 30 years, whereas gold is closer to like where bonds are. There's also a lot of interest, obviously, in cryptocurrencies. Well, here's a problem with cryptocurrencies. First, they're a lot like gold, in which they're only worth what people say they are. There's not a really well-established use case, and there's no adoption as a central currency. So they're a highly speculative asset. They don't, you know, something like Bitcoin is not paying dividends or interest. It's a heavily margin traded asset, which means that people like to just gamble on it. They make margin bets. They short it. They long it. And if somebody has like a 5x margin bet and they are wrong, they lose five times their money. Not, you know, if you have $10,000 and you get approved for a 5x margin bet, that's a $50,000 bet and you can get wiped out. And that's why Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are super volatile. Also, Bitcoin was invented after the Great Recession. So the only market turmoil, like, you know, bad time that Bitcoin's seen has been the COVID crash and then the down year of 2022. Well, what did Bitcoin do during those years? Bitcoin generally followed stocks. It's actually pretty strongly correlated to what stocks do. So Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies should not be considered a safe haven asset. Now, you can't invest in those in your retirement accounts unless you have a self-directed IRA or a solo 401k. So it's not totally on the table, but if you have a brokerage or a cryptocurrency brokerage account, it might be something you invest in or consider. But again, what we're talking about here is if we think that things could get bad in the stock market and for your investment portfolio, what are some things that you could do? And what we're trying to say here is moving from stocks into crypto is not going to, up until now, you know, over the past 16 years that we have data, there's no indication that that will protect you from loss or that even the losses will be less bad. So where does that leave us? All right, we've just kind of gone the rundown on investing, the unpredictability of markets being up and down. We can never predict when a crash will come. We can't predict when the rebound will come from the bottom. And the only conclusion that we can make is that so long as you're saving for and investing for something that's 10, 20, or 30, or 40 years in the future, is just stick with your strategy, stay consistent. But does that mean there's nothing that you should do? No, there are still some things that you should be doing. And the reason why we're bringing this up is, again, it's October. It's an anniversary of one of the worst stock market crashes in our country, as well as in the world. And it's coming up on Halloween. So things are spooky. So we thought, hey, why not? Like, let's just, instead of always banging the drum and saying like, keep investing, things are going strong. These are defensive or conservative things that you can do that even if nothing happens can still be very positive for you. So what are some of those things? Well, they're really quite simple. All right. These are things that have nothing to do with your stock portfolio and everything to do with your overall financial health. And like we talk about all the time in the podcast, as well as emphasize in our book. And again, it's on Amazon, available for purchase now, the revised edition. It's got 279 pages, like 20 plus graphics, bunch of anecdotes. It's even got like some worksheets that you could fill out to help you with your own plan, all of which have been added from the original first edition. Or you can get on Kindle, and Kindle is $9.99. The paperback's $19.95. Because it's bigger, it costs a little bit more because Amazon charges for publishing. So we couldn't ask $15 for it. If we did, we'd lose money. So we had to ask $20 so that we can, just so everybody understands how it works. We make about like $3 per copy sold, and Amazon gets the rest. So it's not like we're trying to like extort anybody here. And we're definitely not making ourselves rich by selling books on Amazon. But anyway, these are things that you should be doing no matter what as part of your strategy and your personal financial plan. Now, as we go into the end of the year and there's a lot of uncertainty about interest rates, job creation, tariffs, the producer price index, and what all this could mean for the economy in 2026, people are worried, right? Even if there's no clear indication of things coming that are bad. People are worried. What the things you should do are really simple and they're easy to control, right? It doesn't involve a whole lot of guessing or betting on what actually does happen. These are just simple things that you should be doing. So the first thing you should be doing is paying attention to your debt. If you have credit card debt, if you have just a couple thousand left on an auto loan, now would be a great time to try to pay off those debts. Get them sorted, right? Just get them done with, get them off your plate. Don't deal with them anymore. We talk in our book, it's funny, right? Like when in the first edition of Service and Wealth, I like got myself all tongue-tied on how to pay off debts. And I was like, it's debt snowball and debt something else. And, you know, so we kind of clarified it with the debt snowball and debt waterfall. Whichever one you choose, you should, right now would be a good time to take a look at where you are in your debts and see if you can't just pay things off. And if that means that you're taking $1,000 that you normally were investing in the stock market and using that to pay off the debt, so be it, right? That's fine. Like, get your debt under control. A similar thing you can do, and that's kind of like a deferred expense or deferred debt where you're like waiting to pay off this expense through your credit card or through a auto loan or a personal loan. A similar thing that you could tackle right now would be deferred maintenance, right? And that means, do you have an old water heater in your house? Does your car need new tires or new belts? Do it now. If things get bad, either inflation goes up or, you know, the economy stagnates or, you know, there's issues in the stock market and you, for some reason, have less money a year from now, that means you'll be less able to handle these things, but they still need to be done, right? And if they become an emergency and actually do break a year from now and you can't afford them, you could be without a car, you could be without hot water, like it could be a real disaster. So when times are good and you're in a strong financial position, take care of the deferred maintenance along with your deferred expenses. Pay down debt and take care of the repairs. The third thing that we should be doing is something that we're constantly pushing through our channel. And again, that's part of what makes the Military Wealth Coach and our strategy and our branding unique is we really, really beat a dead horse on having enough cash. Right. And inside your war chest, you need to have enough cash to, you know, be available for investment opportunities. Well, similarly, you need cash in your emergency savings fund. As we point out in our book and talk about on the blog and here on the pod, the emergency savings fund is for potential expenses that would turn your life into emergency. Like, it's not an emergency if you get sick. It's an emergency, a financial emergency, if you don't have health insurance and now you have a hospital bill. Because then you have to put that on a credit card, and maybe 5 years later, you're still paying for it. Having enough cash for those kind of things is critical. And so Maybe you had a goal of $10,000 in emergency savings and $10,000 in your war chest so you could go buy a house using the VA loan, and you've only got like $15,000 total right now. Now would be a really good time to do some catch-up savings. Again, that might mean that you stop investing or stop putting into your TSP as much right now. Maybe, you know, you should always be above 5% to guarantee you get the match because that's free money. But get yourself up to where you need to be for that $20,000. If you're at $20,000, go beyond that. And more importantly, if you are considering separating from the military, either separating or retiring in the next year or two, now you need to start planning to have extra cash on hand for that transition. So maybe you figured out that you only need $10,000 emergency savings to replace a car, a phone, and get a plane ticket home to see your family. Well, now if you're going to get out, you're going to need to have enough cash on hand to cover your expenses. You know, it's not replacing your income directly necessarily, but to cover your living expenses for 3 months at least. And so that way, in case you get out, you know, a lot of times you make that commitment and a year out and the Department of Defense locks you in and says, yes, you want to get out, you're getting out. We're going to do it. And then 3 months before you get out, all of a sudden the economy goes into recession and there aren't any good jobs, or the company that your best friend runs that was going to give you a job when you get out, they go bankrupt, or something terrible happens and you're like, oh, I want to stay in. Actually, this is bad because now I don't have a job. DOD don't care, right? You're going to be out and you're going to need to be able to survive. And so the things that you can be doing right now that make a lot of sense and will work no matter what happens with the market, whether it goes up or down or sideways, are paying off debts, at debts, short-term debts, taking care of any kind of maintenance that could turn up as an financial emergency in the next few months or a couple years, and building up a strong cash position. And that's going to be really the thing that is actually doing a good job of being defensive for you and your financial situation. That's really like what a prudent person would do. And it's based on history. It's based on studying the markets and it's based on portfolio theory, investment theory. And you need look no further than the greatest investor of our time and maybe all time, Warren Buffett, who is stepping down at the end of this year as the CEO of Berkshire Hathaway. He's managed that company for like 60 years. It's crazy, right? He's almost 100 years old, but he's been driving that company for over 60 years. It's like the single most effective, profitable company in America. The stock price is through the roof. It's five-figure stock price per share for an A share. They've got $386 billion or $380 billion of cash or cash equivalents that they're sitting on, right? So they've been feeling for the past 2 or 3 years that things are getting a little bit weird and might get bad. But what are they doing? They're not buying bonds. They're not selling all their stock. Sure, they sold some Apple stock, but then they turned around, they bought some AI stock. They bought Occidental Petroleum stock. They just bought a part of Occidental Petroleum as a standalone private company. They're continuing to invest. They're continuing to own stocks, but they've just increased that cash position and they've paid down debts. So if the best investor in the world who runs the most efficient company in the United States is doing these things, well, it's probably good enough for you and me. And I could tell you that personally, what we've done is we had a line of credit from our local bank that we were using to do some rehabs on a flip that we're working on. And we just moved some money around to pay that off, right? Like if things get really gnarly in the next few months, I don't want to have to keep paying interest on that, you know, line of credit. So that's paid down to zero. And we also sold an asset, right? We sold an asset that when we looked at it, it was underperforming. It wasn't bad. It was generating about a 10% cash on cash return, but we're looking more for like 15 to 20% in our investments. And so we said, this one is not quite doing it. We're going to sell it. We're going to bring that cash in. We're going to sit on that cash in a high yield savings account where it's going to earn 4.5%. And it's going to do one of two things. If things get really gnarly over the next several months or couple of years, then we have the liquidity to back us up in case, you know, our tenants can't pay rent and our rental income goes down. Guess what? The bank still wants the mortgage, right? So that'll make sure that we don't have to panic sell the real estate. And if things get really bad and there's, you know, a 20 or 30% crash in the stock market, or Maybe even there's like a follow-up kind of like housing bubble that bursts, which there's not a lot of reason to think that would happen. But at the very least, housing prices could go down if people don't have the money to buy houses, right? We'll be in a good position to come in and make a profitable investment. So we're just kind of following that playbook. It's if it's good enough for Warren Buffett, it's good enough for us. And that's why we preach it. And that's why we put it out there in the Service and Wealth book and in the podcast. And like we say in the book, these aren't just like things you might do or things that work for us. These aren't things that like everybody around the, you know, the company office or the squad bay or down at the ready room is doing. These are things that are borrowed from the wealthiest Americans, the top 0.1%, the top 1%, the top 5%, and things that they're doing with their investments, with their money, with their cash and their debt to make sure that they're protected and that they're also poised to like take advantage and make a lot of money. And that brings up one more kind of like Warren Buffettism that we'll kind of, you know, close out the episode with today, in which he says that you should be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. And so, again, I am looking at things and I'm seeing a lot of fearful people out there, and I'm analyzing the economy and I'm analyzing the markets and seeing that there's not a lot of reason for that fear. It seems like a lot of hype. And so you could kind of say, I'm not greedy yet, but I think people are fearful. We're pretty confident and optimistic about where things are going. And we're just positioning ourselves to be greedy in case there's an opportunity that comes up. And that's what we're recommending to you and the rest of the community here with the Service and Wealth podcast and everybody out there is listening and following to the Military Wealth Coach. That is our take on things. So one final thing, you know, it just popped into my head as I was thinking about it. I was like, guess what's coming? The holidays. What happens every time the holidays show up? We get caught off guard. Maybe we're too focused on Halloween and we forgot that we're going home for Thanksgiving. And then by the time we get back from Thanksgiving, we're stressed out about paying that credit card bill off for December 1st for the airfare we bought for Thanksgiving. And now it's December and we suddenly realize we got to go home again or we're going on a vacation. And lo and behold, wait, I've got family and friends and kids and parents and partners who need presents, right? And like, I know not everybody's celebrates Christmas who listens to it, but everybody gives gifts for one holiday or the other. And so, and everybody travels, right? Especially in the military, we usually get basket leave around the Christmas, New Year's holiday. Like every unit shuts down for 2 weeks and they tell their people to go home. And so we're all going to be spending money. And you don't want to go into 2026 with credit card debt. So if you haven't already, cut back on a few things. You know, maybe don't buy something new for yourself. Put off clothes shopping. Skip the next 3 or 4 weeks of going out to restaurants or ordering DoorDash. Save up $500 or $1,000 so you have the cash going into the holidays to pay for the airplane ticket or to buy gifts so you don't come out of the holidays and into 2026 with credit card debt, because that will be the surefire way to ruin your holidays and to start off 2026 on the wrong foot. And, you know, resolutions are not something that we really put a lot of stock in because, you know, personally, why wait? Like if that's something you want to do and you believe in, just start now and do it now. It only takes about 2 weeks to 30 days to make something into a habit. So if your goal is to become a better saver, if your goal is to stop spending on, you know, pop-ups and things in your feed on TikTok or Instagram, or even if you're just trying to like start running 3 days a week to improve your fitness test scores or just to like take care of yourself for the future, don't wait for January. Just start it now, right? If you haven't been saving in your TSP, log into MyPay, go set that allocation up, then log into TSP and tell TSP where you want it, which is you want it in the C fund. I would argue 100% in the C fund. If you need to save some money for buying a new house or buying a new car in the next 1 to 5 years and you don't have a high yield savings account, do yourself a favor and Google high yield savings account, best rates or lowest minimum balance, and you'll find a bunch. You can compare them and open an account and start saving today. Don't wait. Now is the time to take action. And with the internet and the time on your hands, you can do anything you need to. And so at this point, You know, I think we've got a, I think we've got enough out there from this episode to say what you should do and what you shouldn't do in terms of trying to be conservative and defending your financial position. You've got three action items to eliminate bad or short-term debts, to take care of any maintenance you've been waiting to do, and to build up cash. I guess you could say you've got a fourth one and a fifth one, which is if you've been waiting to save for retirement and invest in the TSP or your brokerage, set up those automatic debits right now and automatic buys. And, you know, you can't just set up your bank or DFAST to transfer the money to a TSP or to transfer the money to your brokerage. You also have to tell TSP or the brokerage what to buy with that money. So that would be four. Four is like a two-step thing, right? Tell your bank or DFAST to put money over there and then tell TSP or the brokerage what to buy. And then if you don't have your cash accounts set up in high yield savings, go out and do that right now. That's five things that you can do that will improve your finances. And best of all, it will get your mind off the headlines and you'll stop spinning based on like all these calls for market crashes and recessions and people worrying about Palantir valuations or like Meta valuations. Well, guess what? There's 500 other stocks on the S&P 500. There's, you know, 2,000 on the Russell 2000 index. There's tens of thousands of stocks in the world. And so just because one or two is doing something that's a little bit suspicious with the price action, it doesn't mean that you suddenly think the whole market is going bad and sell. So yeah, that's all we got for this week. I appreciate everybody sticking with me. We had some technical difficulties. We had the internet cut out a couple times. We had somebody come to the door, had a phone call. So the editing will be a little bit choppy and there might be a couple times that I forgot what I was going to say. But on the flip side of that, we got some graphics up this week, which is cool. And as we said before, you can see the whole episode on a video format on YouTube at the Military Wealth Coach channel. So you just search for Military Wealth Coach on YouTube and you'll find us. We've also got the audio versions up on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you want to see the graphics, there will be a link in the description of each of those episodes or in the episode on each of those platforms that'll take you to where you can see a PDF of what we're talking about. And hopefully it's enough to convince you that our whole strategy is rock solid. Right. And you need to be doing what we're talking about. You need to be saving for any expense or any investment that you have in the next 5 years needs to be saving cash in a high yield savings account. So it's protected from loss. It's insured against loss by the FDIC. And it's still earning an above inflation rate of return. It's currently about 4.5% for most high yield savings accounts. And then for everything else that you're investing in the stock market, whether it's your thrift savings plan for retirement, or it's your brokerage account for something 5, 10, or 15 years down the road, just stick with it, right? The sky is not going to fall. It might fall a little bit, but it will always be up there. And so you just want to make sure that you haven't taken your, you know, taken your legs out from underneath yourself by selling now and missing more gains or selling after the crash and locking in your losses. All right. Well, until next time, I hope everybody has, you know, enjoys fall. It's the best time of the year. This weekend is homecoming for Navy football. So go Navy, beat the Owls. Excuse me. So until next time, I hope everybody has a great time doing whatever you're doing. It's autumn. It's a beautiful day here. I hope you're having beautiful weather there. I think autumn's the best time of the year. We're going to be doing some fun stuff for Halloween this year, as we always do. And this weekend is Navy homecoming. They're playing FIU or FAU. It's FAU, right? Florida Atlantic Owls. So I can't say go Navy beat Army, but I could say go Navy beat Owls. Maybe not the right, but either way. All right. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Thank you for spending time with me today. I know how busy life is in and around the military, and I don't take your attention or your time for granted. It really means a lot to me that you're here. And that's why I pour so much of myself into each episode to make sure it's worth your time. If today's episode helped you, here's your challenge. Share it with a teammate, battle buddy, spouse, friend, partner, or someone in your family who could use this information. Together, we're growing a stronger, smarter, and wealthier military community, one listener at a time. For more resources, tools, or to sign up for a free coaching session, head over to www.military.com.
www.militarywealthcoach.com. And you can also find us on LinkedIn and Facebook by just searching for Military Wealth Coach. Follow us on Instagram and X at MWC112358. Our groundbreaking book, Service and Wealth, 12 Proven Money Habits to Master Military Finance, has just been revised and expanded for 2025, and it's available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon right now. And stay tuned for our upcoming release of our next book, The Ultimate Military Retirement Plan, Your Standard Operating Procedure to Financial Freedom. Hey, until next time, stay financially fit and mission ready.